If you pick up a starving dog and make him prosperous, he will not bite you. This is the principal difference between a dog and a man. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to today's episode, February 23rd, 2021 edition of World News Brief on the CGMRadio.com network. I am your host, Winston R. Holland, and that was a man much more prescient and wise than I. Who was that by? That was by none other than the great 19th century social commentator Mark Twain. If you pick up a starving dog and make him prosperous, he will not bite you. This is the principal difference between dog and man. Gotta love that guy. A lot to get to today. There are about 800 stories that I cannot get to on this show, but that's why, lucky for all of you, you have not only the CGM radio network, but you have CGM.news. Now, there is a brand new feature up at CGM.news that if you listen to this show on a regular basis, you're going to want to see that feature. What is the new feature? It is our daily, Monday through Friday, we all need a break, right? Daily World News Brief Roundup, the top news from around the world, and you are going to want to pay attention to that because things are heating up in every sphere, especially with Iran. You're going to want to follow that. We've got Israeli elections coming up that you're going to want to follow, and we're going to talk about briefly on this show, but there's so much I cannot get to here. That's why we have CGM.news, and there's even in the toolbar, if you go to articles and let the menu drop down, you're going to see a link to all of the world news briefings Monday through Friday. So we've done three so far. We started it on Friday. Today's is already up. Check that out. I reserve the right to update it throughout the day as world news breaks. And of course, all of the U.S. news and other news that you're used to seeing will be up at CGM.news. Also, make sure to follow us at CGM Radio News on, really, Gab is the main place where we're gabbing these days. Parler is okay. It does. I'm not sure what's going on with Parler. I think Parler needs some help kind of returning to its former glory. I mean, Amazon really just decimated them. They just absolutely decimated them, which is why I encourage us to buy as little as possible on Amazon. It is just, it's really, really terrible what they did under this guise that we're not going to allow anything, on our platform that promotes violence. And yeah, right. Yeah, we know what this is. When it accomplishes your political goals, when it destroys the main competitor of your friends, Twitter and Facebook. We know what's going on here. We don't believe that. Also, as promised, I'm going to get to the Abraham Lincoln quote at the end of this broadcast about how he destroys slavery. A, B, C, D. Logic. Pretty fascinating how he did that and how he wrote about that. So I'm excited to do that. But first, well, actually, we're going to do North America first, and we're going to start in Canada. It's important for us to see really what's going on here. I think a lot of us understand that the COVID situation, and we're going to talk about masks actually in a little while, and about some science with masks that you're not going to see on any or hear about on any of the media. But COVID has really been an excuse to do anything and everything that the left would love to do. Of course, the big thing that they cared about wanting to do was, of course, they had to take care of the man that they hate more than Adolf Hitler. They hate more than the mullahs in Iran. They hate even more than Vladimir Putin. I think they even more than Russia. Of course, we know they really like love Russia and helped out and worked with Russia in the past, but they really, really hate, we know, Donald J. Trump, and they had to get rid of him. And of course, they use COVID as an excuse to blanket the United States with millions and millions and millions of mail-in ballots. And of course, people are getting 2, 4, 6, 10 mail-in ballots. You can just drop them off in these boxes. Nothing to see. No possibility for fraud here when you don't even need ID verification, even though you need ID verification for everything else you need to do. But you don't need ID verification for the most important kind of sacred right that we have here in the United States, that really is the most sacred right of any free republic, and that is to not only cast a vote, but have your vote counted legally and have the only votes that are counted, votes that are actually in accordance with the laws of the nation that you're voting in. And we don't have that here because you don't even have to present an ID in many places. They don't even do signature verifications in place. So we know all about that. We're not going to revisit all that. But another thing we know that the left loves to do, and I've chronicled this in a previous broadcast, and that, of course, is the persecution of people of faith, specifically Christians. I think we're going to see more and more of that with Jews as well. Muslims, I think for the most part, get a pass, although I have seen some stuff where left-wing groups have went after this imam in the Northeast that was preaching against homosexuality, and they got that imam to shut up and submit. So Muslims actually are not completely free from pressure from the left either, although for the most part, I think they get a free pass because they see them as political partners, because as we talked about last week, the left and Islamism, which is the promotion of Islam politically over a society, they're partners. They're partners in human crime against humanity. But this, I saw this in Not the Bee. You know, I love the Babylon Bee. We all love the Babylon Bee. I'll sometimes link to articles on Babylon Bee. I love it whenever I see the Babylon Bee and Elon Musk kind of exchange barbs. That's a lot of fun. I think my favorite was when Elon Musk interacted with The Onion and retweeted one of their tweets and said, "Hey, have you guys read the Babylon Bee? It's really great." So I'm sure they probably were not ultra happy about that, but hopefully they had a sense of humor about it as well. I don't know. But Canada just sentenced a pastor to prison for breaking Rona rules after he was, quote, tried in secret. Wow, what does that sound like? Does that sound like a free Western liberal republic founded on the rule of law? Or does that sound like a totalitarian system, a totalitarian government that has to hide certain trials that they're ashamed of? He must promise not to preach as a condition of his release. Where have we heard that one before? Book of Acts. Are you kidding me? This is happening in North America. Most of our listeners are in North America. This is happening on the same ground we walk on every day. It's unbelievable. It's from Joel Abbott, Not the Bee. Oh yeah, I was going to say, notthebee.com, where they really do kind of these outlandish stories that are actually, but they're actually true. Some of them are pretty funny. Some of them are more serious, and they actually do some really good, solid reporting. So don't mistake the fact that the Babylon Bee, you know, has this, it's, you know, fake news that you can trust. Not the Bee on the other end of the spectrum actually does pretty solid reporting. I encourage you to check it out, and we link to it up at cgm.news from time to time. A pastor in Edmonton, Canada, was just tried, sentenced, and jailed for refusing to follow government pandemic mandates. Pastor James Coates of Grace Life Church was charged and arrested after last Sunday's service with repeatedly failing to follow mask and 15% capacity mandates. His crime? Hosting 300 maskless people who voluntarily gathered inside to worship God, taking a willing 99%, I would say 99% plus, chance of surviving a virus to obey their Savior's command to gather and build the church. Since being put in prison, he has been sitting, quote, in isolation in a cell block, end quote. Just a few days later, the government has already tried him and handed down a sentence to prison for his high crimes and treason against science. Science. We cannot. The greatest crime of today is committing crimes against science. Now, it's important to note, a lot of times people will say, well, science says there is no God. You got to understand that science is not an entity. Science is actually a process by which you discover truth about the natural world. It doesn't have a mind. It's not like there's not this God called science that we have to follow. It's every dictate. Although you would wonder with the way some of these scientists talk and the way people talk sometimes. You just have to follow science. I've seen comments and, you know, online where they say stuff like, you're an idiot, you're not following science, you're an idiot. And they provide no actual evidence for what they're saying. It's just science says. Well, science is not God. Science is actually a set of tools, like I said, which provides the ability for finite humans such as us to discover truths about the natural world. And so you have to make a distinction between science and scientists. There's science, which is what I just mentioned. There's scientists, which are people that ostensibly perform science, do science, and then report on it. But then you also have something called scientism. And scientism is this, really, it's more like a religion where whoever the established scientific authorities are of the day, whatever they say, that's what we believe and what we follow. But it's important for us to note that just because there is this, these authorities, this group that are the authorities in a particular nation, does not mean that they're always right. Case in point, who are the established medical authorities in Nazi Germany? Who are the established scientific authorities in Nazi Germany? America, even in our past, has had a history of scientific racism. There's been scientific racism from the authorities in the United States of America here. So just because they are the established authorities does not mean that everything that they say is correct. And, you know, you're talking about here the 300 maskless people who voluntarily gathered inside to worship God. We're going to talk about masks in a minute, talk about some science with those masks that challenges kind of what is really ubiquitous. It is just everywhere. Mask, 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 mask. Not so fast. But back to Pastor Coates. This is where they want to go. You know, I think we should always be suspect about when authorities say they're doing everything for our good. And everything that they want to do goes in line with a political agenda. And you say, oh, the left doesn't want to persecute Christians. Yeah, they do. They've been wanting to do it for a long time. And it seems like they're even accelerating that persecution quite a bit with their constant talk about, you know, white Christian nationalists. Is simply code word for just saying, we want to go against any white people, and not just white people, by the way, and not just straight white people, by the way, anyone who's against their agenda. There is even the Gateway Pundit reported about a trans man or trans woman, I forget, that I think a trans woman, so a guy who thinks he's a woman, who actually was part of the Capitol storm. Who walked in, trespassed, broke the law, yes, but it was actually put in a cell, like in solitary confinement for days, and may even still be there. I don't know. But this was a trans individual who happens to be a Trump supporter and who broke the laws, but is just, yes, broke the law, but they walked in peacefully. They weren't going in there with a gun or anything like that, being like thrown into solitary confinement with the lights on. For 4 days straight. I mean, just absolute torturing. This trans person They don't care if you're trans. They don't care if you're gay. They don't care if you're a person of color or all of these, this list of things that they say that they care about. What they care about, are you on the agenda or are you not? You could be some crusty, old, angry white dude. Anyone in government? That sounds familiar. Who's a socialist? Or you could be a person of color, trans man that happens to be a Trump supporter, and they're going to care a whole lot more about the civil rights of that crusty old white guy than they are about the black trans Trump supporter. That's just how it is, because what this is a communist revolution, and they use race, they use gender, they use LGBTQ stuff, whatever they can, they use that for their purposes. But it's not ultimately about that. It's ultimately about their power and gaining power and doing whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. His wife, Erin, said the government, quote, went for the jugular and, quote, tried him in secret. She also said he must promise to not pastor anymore in order to be released, but that he is unwilling to do so. God bless him. God bless him. Pray for Pastor James Coates. I'll try to keep an eye out on the development of that and of that trial. But this guy's a hero. He's a hero of the faith. He is standing strong against government persecution who are using COVID as a cover to persecute Christians. This is absolutely insane. But here in the West, they can't come out and just say, we want to persecute Christians. They have to use the virus as an excuse to do so. And, you know, perhaps this is a time of testing that God is bringing upon the church. And so the question is, how will we respond? How will we respond as individuals? How will we respond as a church community? Will we stand strong and follow Jesus and obey his word regardless of the consequences? And I think that's a question we all have to ask ourselves. It's good to think about it. One of the things that I was told as a young believer was you need to decide ahead of time what you're going to do if persecution were to come. You need to decide that ahead of time. You know, this was in the late 90s when, you know, it didn't look like it was even anywhere closely remotely on the horizon here at home. That would really begin in, you know, the late 2000s. So I think that's what all of us need to do. But pray for Pastor Coates. That is it's a tough situation that he is in. We're going to get to a situation a little later in the broadcast in India, how a couple was kicked out of their village after their conversion to Christ. I want to share that with you guys as well. But for now, we're going to continue on the North America First theme. Trump to use show of force at CPAC to claim control of the GOP. This is from Newsmax. Sandy Fitzgerald. Former President Donald Trump plans to use his appearance at the upcoming Conservative Political Action Conference as a show of force that will send the message that he will be the Republican, quote, presumptive 2024 nominee for the presidency, according to top Trump allies. If you have any question about whether or not Donald Trump is running in 2024, I really think you should put those questions aside, because I think as long as he can healthfully do so, I think we're going to see Trump in there. Quote, Trump effectively is the Republican Party, Trump's senior advisor Jason Miller told Axios' Mike Allen for a report Monday that Trump will claim, quote, total control of the party during his speech this coming Sunday at CPAC. Quote, the only chasm is between Beltway insiders and grassroots Republicans around the country. When you attack President Trump, you're attacking the Republican grassroots. And boy, is that true. Trump is like 75% plus of Republicans say that Trump is the leader of the party. That's why you got Kevin McCarthy, after slamming Trump in D.C., goes to Trump and, you know, kind of begging to work with him. You got Nikki Haley, after she slammed him in D.C., or she slammed him publicly, then she goes down to, tries to go down to Mar-a-Lago for a meeting, and he says no. He said, no, we're not doing a meeting. I mean, she eviscerated him. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. And then she tries to get a meeting with him. You know, I don't understand. That's the hubris of some of these politicians. Is it's out of this world. It's unfathomable. It's beyond comprehension. I guess you have to get into the minds of the way these politicians think, how they can just verbally eviscerate and trash somebody and then expect to get a meeting with them after that. Look, I get it. I understand why Trump met with Kevin McCarthy, but he had no reason to meet with Nikki Haley. She's an absolute traitor to Trump and to the MAGA movement. Why in the world should he give her the time of day? And here's the thing. You know, we see this, and it frustrated us for years. Trump really had an uncanny ability to surround himself with his enemies. But if he keeps rejecting people of the likes of the Nikki Haley's, who try to come after thrashing and trashing him verbally, try to come and be friends with him, if he can keep people like Nikki Haley away from himself and out of his circle, Trump could be an unbelievable success. But if he does not, well, then he's going to face the consequences, just like he faced the consequences his first 4 years of surrounding himself with the likes of McMasters and Rex Tillerson and John Bolton, these swamp creature types. How in the world? But one guy he did surround himself with that I think was a phenomenal pick, who was first a CIA director and then Secretary of State, is Mike Pompeo. And we're going to get to Pompeo in a second as he talks about Iran. But first, I want to hit up the Israeli elections. Oh, we're going to talk about Venezuela. Venezuela. I love it. I love it. guys, Venezuela is turning away from socialism. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. I couldn't believe it when I saw that. I could not believe it. We're going to get to Iran, then we're going to get to Venezuela. Real quick, Israeli elections update. So many of us, including myself, even though I do world news briefs, so much has been happening here in the U.S. The world has changed. Look, the world has changed here in the U.S. We have a president and a vice president I can't even believe. It's surreal. I think a lot of us, whenever we see him as president, we see Kamala as vice president. She's the one taking the calls with the world leaders. And, you know, Joe Biden literally has a cap on his day at 8 a.m. There's just something wrong. There's so many things that I could say. I'm not gonna go into. So I really, it's very easy to get distracted away from what's going on in the rest of the world, even for someone like me who does a podcast called World News Brief, when our whole world has changed here in the U.S. But I love Israel. If you're listening to this broadcast, you probably love Israel, and we want to keep up with what is going on there. So what's been going on in terms of their elections? So they actually have elections that are happening, let's see, March 23rd. So in exactly 1 month, they're going to have elections again. So how did this happen? It's just a mess. I feel like since the beginning of this podcast, I've been reporting on the mess that is the Israeli elections. So this is just a quick summary from Wikipedia, actually, that I found helpful that I'll just share real quick. According to the coalition agreement signed between Likud and Blue and White in 2020. Remember, Likud is Benjamin Netanyahu's agreement, this like power-sharing agreement. Because, you know, the elections were close and nobody got a majority in parliament, and it's just a mess. Elections were to be held 36 months after the swearing-in of the 35th government, making 23rd May 2023 the last possible election date. However, Israeli law stipulates that if the 2020 state budget was not passed by 23rd December 2020, the Knesset would be dissolved and elections would be held by March 23rd, 2021. So while we were, you know, watching the election fraud insanity here in the U.S., a state budget wasn't passed by December 23rd, 2020 in Israel, And so the previous election was dissolved, and they're going to have to go to yet, I think this makes it number four, ladies and gentlemen, a fourth round of elections. So that is what is going on there. Now, interestingly, I saw this from the Jerusalem Post: 130 former IDF officers call on Gantz to quit the race. Gantz, as I just said, head of the Blue and White Party. This is from the Jerusalem Post. The pressure on Defense Minister Benny Gantz to quit the March 23rd election intensified on Monday when 130 former senior IDF officers published a letter calling for him to remove his Blue and White Party from the race. Wow, okay, now why would they do that? Benny, enough, the ad states. You tried everything. Now put the country first. Now these are a lot of people that worked for Benny Gantz, Benny Gantz's friends. These are not his enemies actually doing this. The ad praises Gantz for following his conscience in the past and calls upon him to display courage before it is too late. Quote, the time has come to make your final decision as a leader and leave this dangerous election, which will leave you below the electoral threshold and leave another party outside. The officers wrote, do not permit votes to be wasted in the camp advocating change. Israel is wounded and has hit new depths. Israel will salute you. Now, what are they talking about here? How will the Blue and White Party staying out of the election help his wing of how will that help Benny Gantz's wing of electoral politics? Well, the problem is that most polls show Blue and White right now not passing the 3.25% electoral threshold. What that means is that in Israeli parliament, your party, they got a bunch of parties over there in Israel. We've got two over here. They got a bunch. It's kind of a mess, but a very interesting and fun mess, in my personal opinion, as someone who can look at it from the outside. If I lived in Israel, I would not think it was interesting or fun at all or fascinating. I would be probably reeling from it and ticked off because it's a tough, complicated situation. So your party, to get any seats in parliament at all, you have to at least get 3.25% of the vote. And apparently Blue and White is doing so bad, it's not looking like they're even going to get that. So they're saying, look, stay out of it. And then those voters, instead of voting for Blue and White, whose votes will be wasted, those can go to other parties in our coalition. Because over there in Israel, no party's going to get more than 50%. You have to have at least 50% of the vote to be able to form a governing coalition in parliament. And so you have to form coalitions. Multiple parties coming together to form a coalition to get up to 50%. So Blue and White is apparently out of the equation. Stay out of it so our voters can vote for other parties in our coalition, and that's going to bolster us more as opposed to wasting a vote because you're not even going to get 3.25% in the parliament. So that's what's going on in Israel. Elections coming up March 23rd. Guys, I'm having deja vu. Even as I say that, it's like, for more than half of the time, I've been doing this show since January 2019. It seems like at least more than half the time I've been, okay, an Israeli election is coming up. Something happened, and here comes another one in 3 months, and here comes another one in 3 months. It's simply unbelievable. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Psalm 122, may they prosper. Those who love you, may peace be within your walls and prosperity. Then your palaces and gates and all that. I don't have it memorized. Psalm 122, love that Psalm. I meant to mention this at the beginning. You've got to check out the interview that our very own Bob Siegel did for the Bob Siegel Show podcast. It was on his Sunday night broadcast. He podcasted it out yesterday with Chad Bianco, Sheriff of Riverside County. We here at the CGM Radio Network are dubbing him America's Sheriff. The guy is a hero. He is standing up. He is standing up for his people against the draconian, Stalin-esque lockdowns of, quote, Governor Newsom. And he is just doing a fantastic job. I love the interview. I love his spirit. He's a happy warrior. He's happy to do it. This guy really should be seen as America's sheriff because he is defending the freedom and liberty of his people against Gavin Newsom's just outright tyranny. Go to cgmradio.com/Bob or just search for The Bob Siegel Show on your favorite podcasting app. You will not, don't miss that interview. It's really great. There is good news out there. That's good news. Yeah, you're going to see mostly bad news from Washington, D.C., but not all bad news. You know, Joe Manchin didn't buckle on the filibuster. He voted against getting rid of the filibuster. So I think we could see every once in a while Manchin playing kingmaker. Most of the time, sadly, he votes with the Democrats, but he might just be the guy that preserves some semblance of the American Republic. We'll see. Pray for our country. Pray for our country. Okay. Oh, yeah, there's one more thing on Israel. Boy, I miss Mike Pompeo. We're going to get to him in just a second. But remember what Einstein's definition of insanity was? Repeating the same thing over and over and over and over again and expecting a different result. We were talking about science earlier. If you conduct a science experiment and you do it multiple times and you keep getting the same results, well, you know, okay, this is either works or it doesn't, right? Either I tried it and it worked. Okay, so we've got some hard scientific proof here. But if you try like a science experiment multiple times and it doesn't work, then you go, okay, yeah, this isn't valid science. This is untrue. I had my hypothesis. I followed the scientific method, but it didn't work out. We discard it. Ladies and gentlemen, the two-state solution, it's almost laughable. We have been trying it for decades. It has been foreign policy orthodoxy for decades. But it is a fantasy. It is a fantasy. It hasn't worked. Every time we have tried to negotiate with the Palestinians and work out some kind of deal, they come back and reject it. Look, I could see maybe in the future, if somehow there's some mega revolution within the Palestinian Authority and we get new leadership and the current leadership are not terrorists, which they are terrorists, if that were to happen somehow, then okay, maybe the two-state solution would have some kind of shot. But even then, their educational system, their UN-funded and backed and developed educational curriculums, are anti-Israel. So I don't see a whole lot of hope, not just for the Palestinian leadership, but their people are being indoctrinated to hate Israel and to hate the Jewish state. They don't even believe that Israel even has a right to exist. That's why they say, from the river to the sea, Palestine shall be free. What river are they talking about? The Jordan River. What sea are they talking about? The Mediterranean Sea. If you're not familiar with where those are, look it up. Let's see. Look it up and see for yourself what area of land that they claim in their songs and in their folklore to own that is legitimately theirs. Not to mention the calls for their own people for the destruction of the Jewish state. So yeah, this is so here we go. U.S. is Blinken stresses two-state solution, of course, to Palestinian conflict and call with Israeli minister. Of course he does. This is from the Al Jazeera. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told his Israeli counterpart on Monday that a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict was the best for the future of Israel, the U.S. State Department said. Blinken, in a call with Israeli Foreign Minister Gabi Ashkenazi, quote, emphasized the Biden administration's belief that the two-state solution is the best way to ensure Israel's future as a Jewish and democratic state, living in peace alongside a viable and democratic Palestinian state, the State Department said. Oh, just living in peace and harmony. A viable, yes, a viable and democratic Palestinian state. So, so viable and so democratic that their prime minister has been the prime minister for like 800 years. Oh, so viable and oh, so democratic. That's all I'm going to say about that. It's not going to have, there's not going to be a two-state solution. You know, especially with the Abraham Accords and just the unprecedented success that the Trump administration had, which I think in large part due to great success to Mike Pompeo. And I'm not a big fan of Jared Kushner, but he was obviously a big part of that as well. And I loved the Israeli ambassador, David Friedman, former Israel or U.S. ambassador to Israel, David Friedman. But you know, that's not the world that we live in. But you're looking, you see these peace deals, these Gulf Arab states, those are permanent. The Biden administration can't come in and undo the peace agreements that Israel has with these Arab states, such as the UAE and Qatar and Sudan and so forth. So some of the stuff is permanent, which is really cool. But other things that the Trump administration did were not permanent. And that, of course, would be the Iran pulling out from the disaster, otherwise known as the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Pompeo to Newsmax TV. Biden admin about to throw away success in Iran. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo questioned aloud the Biden administration's approach to foreign policy on Newsmax TV on Monday, saying he wanted to give them, quote, every opportunity to get it right, but feared that on some issues they were about to throw it all away for almost nothing. Why don't we hear from the man himself? I miss hearing from Mike Pompeo, don't you? I certainly do. So let's hear from the man himself.
But speaking of the Middle East, Mr. Secretary, President Biden signaled he wants to get us back into this ridiculous Iran nuclear agreement. Iran has frankly been flouting its capabilities. It's been saying that the U.S. needs to undo the sanctions before it comes back to the table. Does their sort of strategy when it comes to Iran concern you?
It concerns me a great deal. It's why President Trump very quickly convened a strategy effort, and we put together a plan that put real pressure on the regime. And now they're about to throw that all away in exchange for what appears to be almost nothing. You saw, Sean, you saw the other day, the Iranians have begun to test this administration. They've announced that they're not going to allow inspections. They took a strike through Shia militia proxies in Iraq. The Iranians understand one thing. They understand strength. They understand deterrence. They understand a leader who's prepared to put real pressure on them. If we show weakness and if we're prepared to take a deal at any cost, we'll get a really crappy deal again. And frankly, American security can't afford that. Stability in the Middle East will be destroyed, and the threat to Israel will be real.
Yeah, it will. The Iran nuclear deal puts Iran on a path to a nuclear bomb. It saves the regime. It infuses billions and billions and billions of cash, some of which is, you know, remember that $1.9 billion that landed on the tarmac in Iran, just cash, untraceable cash they can just take. Let's just divvy it out amongst our terror proxies. One of the things that the Trump administration did that was brilliant, and not just brilliant, but incredibly important, was to put Iran on notice that if you, through one of your proxies, kill Americans, perform acts of terrorism against us, we are not just going to hold that proxy accountable. We are going to hold you accountable because we know the source. We know the mother ship from which all the other ships get their supplies and their energy. All that's going away. We know they want to enter back into the deal. They love the deal. They love helping the Iranians out. The last thing that they have right now is any kind of desire to see the Iranian regime fall, the mullahs, the Islamic State of Iran fall, and be placed with a free Western liberal democracy there in Iran. They don't. They want it propped up. I thought, and I said many times on the show, and predicted that the Iranian regime would fall. And I think that is what would have happened had Trump actually stayed in power. Now, it's not looking like it so much. That being said, God is on his throne, and it's something that he can do if he wants to. But, you know, I was talking about the hubris of some of these politicians earlier. If there's a nation on the earth that has hubris, and we're not even talking about China this episode, but I saw this from their foreign minister, Zarif. Iran expects compensation for $1 trillion damage inflicted by U.S. sanctions. Oh, you do you? Iran's, this is from Israel Hayom, Iran's top diplomat says that if the U.S. fails to lift all sanctions, Tehran will leave the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action and continue to boost its nuclear program. This is not a threat, Mohammad Javad Zarif says. We are simply exercising the remedial measures foreseen in the JCPOA. I just threatened you, but this is not a threat. Okay, it's not a threat in the sense of, you know, we're going to bomb you if you don't do this. But we all know what this is. This is leverage. They're trying. They think that they can get anything, everything from the Biden administration because they got so much from the Obama administration. The hubris is unreal. How about no, Iran? How about no? Okay, I got to get to this article from stream.org. I really couldn't believe my eyes when I saw it. But Venezuela really is, if you want to do a kind of a case study on a nation before and after socialism, Venezuela is a great one. A good personal friend of mine actually lived in Venezuela before it became socialist, and he said it was a wonderful place to be. Venezuela was great. Well, then Maduro gets in there. I'm sorry, not Maduro. Hugo Chavez gets in there, and then it goes to Maduro, and we see it just destroyed, just decimated. I encourage you to look at the article up at cgm.news. There's a fantastic chart. All it does is it's showing the GDP of Venezuela throughout the 2000s. You know, it goes up, and it peaks at about 2009 or so, and then it just sinks. I mean, just sinks. From John Miltimore, stream.org. Venezuela turns to privatization after being bankrupted by socialism. Hey, Bernie Sanders. Hey, Cortez. Hey, Kamala Harris. Hey, Democrat Party. And Republicans who are siding with the Democrat Party, you might want to read this article. It might be instructive to you. You're supposedly like the smartest people in the country. Can you read basic facts, basic statistics, basic news? That it ain't working out. Oh, and by the way, this was democratic socialism. These people were elected in. Of course, we know those Dominion and Smartmatic machines and stuff were down there in Venezuela too. But anyway, early in 2007, after winning a second six-year term as president, Hugo Chavez announced his plan to nationalize Venezuela's largest telecommunications company, CANTV, hinting at wider nationalization plans to come. Quote, all that was privatized, let it be nationalized. Dun-da-da-dun! All that was privatized, let it be nationalized. Oh, what a strong man. What a hero. What a man of the people. Let's steal everything from the people and put it all under my domain. My dominion. Yes, I use the term dominion. very purposefully there. Announced Chavez, who had run under the banner of democratic socialism. Nearly a decade and a half later, on the brink of mass famine and a growing energy crisis, Venezuela is now moving in the opposite direction. According to Bloomberg News, so this wasn't Breitbart, this wasn't the American Thinker, we're going to get to an American Thinker article about mass in just a second, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has quietly begun transferring state assets back into the hands of private owners in an effort to reverse the country's economic collapse. I'm telling you, there's good news out there, ladies and gentlemen. There's good news. That doesn't mean it's necessarily here in the United States, but this is good news. The fact that I can report this to you guys, and you guys can read about it on stream.org and cgm.news. This is good. This is good. This is positive. Quote, saddled with hundreds of failed state companies and an economy barreling over a cliff, the Venezuelan government is abandoning socialist doctrine by offloading key enterprises to private investors, offering profit in exchange for a share of revenue or products, write Caracas-based journalists Fabiola Zerpa and Nicole Yapur. The transfer, which was not announced publicly but was confirmed by, quote, nine people with knowledge of the matter, reportedly includes dozens of coffee processors, grain silos, and hotels that were confiscated as part of Venezuela's widespread nationalization that began under Chavez. That, my friends, is an oh-so-interesting development in Venezuela, and trust me, we will be following that developing story. All right. Oh, gosh, I hope I can get this name correct. You know, that's the thing when you do World News Brief. If only I knew every language in the world, or at least how to, the dialect and how to pronounce the names of every language in the world, everywhere around the world would be very helpful. But, here we go. Sikanuskaya, maybe? I don't know. Calls on Belarusians to attend nationwide street rallies on March 25th. If you guys remember, Alexander Lukashenko last year supposedly won an election where he got like 90% plus of the vote. You know, these dictators, if they're going to cheat like this, you would think they would make it look a little more believable, because they want to look like they strongly won. They can't handle the fact that everybody doesn't love them. So they do these election results where they win like 90% plus, when in reality, maybe it was 20%. So it's really strange. You would think they would try to make it look a little bit more believable, but I think they have such big egos and such thin skin, they can't handle it. So even though they know the results are false, if they make it look a certain way, then they're happy. They're deluded of their own grandiose in their own minds. Belarusian opposition leader Svetlana. I already tried saying her name once, not doing it again, has called on Belarusians to continue their protests with street rallies on March 25th against Alexander Lukashenko, who has run the country since 1994. Democracy in action, ladies and gentlemen. In a statement on Telegram, she said that Lukashenko has, quote, not just caused a terrible crisis in Belarus, but has become the main threat to the country's independence. Lukashenko is trying to sell Belarus piece by piece in exchange for loans and support. She said, her statement said, hinting at Lukashenko's talks with Russian President Putin held on the same day in Russia. Putin has supported Lukashenko during ongoing protests that started after Lukashenko was officially declared the winner of the August 9th presidential election. She said, for March 25th, Zenvoli Freedom Day, she said, I call on the Belarusians to begin getting ready for that day now, to mobilize the protest spirit, create safety groups, to plan returning to the streets of your cities, because the only force that can prevent our countries being sold out is the Belarusian people. Does that sound familiar? When the Supreme Court has let us down in unbelievable ways last year and now this year. We have like two, sometimes three, real Supreme Court justices. That's all I'm going to say about that. But the Belarusian thing, I think is, you know, is picturesque of really what's going on in many places where it really does not, many of us feel like our vote is, at least on the national level, is worthless. I feel like my vote counts here in Texas, except when it comes to president. Even though I think our elections are, for the most part, sound. What happens in Pennsylvania and in Wisconsin and Michigan and Georgia and Arizona and Nevada affects us, which is why Texas had standing in the Texas versus Pennsylvania case, which is why Sidney Powell and Lynn Wooden, these other lawyers, have standing with the Supreme Court for cases that are going on now. Because what goes on there, and if they violate the Constitution and how they do their election laws, that impacts us. And what other place is there to adjudicate this stuff but at the Supreme Court? Who knows? Maybe they're getting threats. UN Chief Guterres warns white supremacy is a transnational threat. You can read about this. It's up at cgm.news. Just understand that they're really using white supremacy as the global boogeyman to accomplish any and all objectives that they want to accomplish. They want to try to basically silence opposition. They're using white supremacy. They're using the Capitol riot to silence opposition. And if you happen to be white, happen to be a Christian, happen to love our country, well, you're a white Christian nationalist and you are therefore a threat to our nation. We have to reject that. We have to stand up to that. Because that kind of, that is what turns into the persecution of Christians. And when you even see places like Christianity Today that are promoting this kind of garbage, that are really promoting the government to essentially, without saying it blatantly, basically just partnering with the left and the leftist government of demonizing Christians who love their country. And look, if they think, you know, kind of like the Christians in Germany ingratiated themselves with the Nazi regime, you know, I mean, if they think that they won't eventually turn on them, they're absolutely wrong. They will. It's just like the atheists, like what we talk about in Scotland, the atheists that partner with the Islamists in order to persecute Christians and Jews there in Scotland with these ludicrous rules. This ludicrous law about banning certain speech even in your private home. The atheists and the Islamists will go along for a little while, but eventually, we know ultimately what will happen when the Islamists take over. The atheists convert or die. Speaking of converting or dying, this is from India via persecution.org. Couple banished from village in India after refusing to renounce Christian faith. In December 2020, Jaga Padiyami and his wife converted to Christianity. Due to their conversion, the family has been harassed and banished from their home village in northeast India. Padiyami and his wife converted to Christianity after they were visited by several Christians sharing the gospel. In January, Padiyami and his wife were called to a village meeting. At this village meeting, the chief Kambawada village, Koya Samaj, demanded Padiyami and his wife renounce their Christian faith. They both refused. It's brave. It's faithfulness. Faithfulness to Christ. After hearing his refusal, residents of Kambawada village began to harass Padiyami and his wife. The village chief gave Padiyami 5 days to renounce his Christian faith or else be banished from the village. After 5 days, Padiyami and his wife were recalled to a village meeting where they were asked about their decision. Padiyami said, quote, "Even though you will drive me out of the village, I will not leave Jesus Christ. Even though you will drive me out of the village, I will not leave Jesus Christ." You know, whether you throw us in the fiery furnace or not, I will not bow down to your statue, Nebuchadnezzar. God can save us, but even if he doesn't, we will not bow down. This response enraged local villagers who ransacked Padiyami's home. All of Padiyami's belongings were tossed into the street and the house was locked so Padiyami and his wife could not re-enter. The couple was then forced to leave the village. According to Padayami, the villagers threatened to kill Padayami and his wife if they returned to the village without renouncing their Christian faith. The couple filed a complaint against the villagers with the Malkangiri police, but no solution has been reached between Padayami and the villagers. The couple has been forced to relocate to another village several miles away for the Kambawada village. You know, I understand that this isn't breaking national crazy news. It's not world-shattering news that I try to, you know, focus on here. But it's just these stories like this, these remote stories you'll never hear about on the mainstream media that I want to bring to you guys to encourage us in our faith to stay strong. We do not know what the fate of America is going to be. Are we going to go down this same path? You know, will the path that we're going on now be rerouted? I don't know. But, you know, when I see stuff like a video where I saw the other day where literally in Israel, you have to show them your COVID vaccination papers in order to be able to go into the grocery store to buy food. Basic necessities, no basic necessities without your COVID vaccine paperwork. In Israel? I don't know. Does that mean that the end is like a few years away? I don't know. But I definitely do say, come, Lord Jesus. All right. As promised, we're going to hit this story on masks. And then I want to get to that fascinating Abe Lincoln quote on slavery. This is from the American thinker, Dr. Brian C. Junedef, February 22nd, unmasking the medical experts. Masks have become an unwelcome staple of American life with no end in sight. Mask recommendations change faster and more frequently than the weather. How did we get here? In the medical world, particularly in operating rooms, masks protect patients undergoing surgery from bacteria passing from the mouths and noses of surgeons, nurses, and anesthesiologists to an open surgical wound. The Rolls-Royce of masks is the N95 mask, used by healthcare workers when caring for COVID-infected individuals. Assuming the mask is properly fitted and worn, a given for healthcare workers, but much less likely for a shopper in the grocery store, they are generally effective. I say generally because the COVID virus is about 0.125 microns in size, while the N95 mask pores are larger at 0.3 microns. You get that? The COVID virus is 0.125 microns, while the N95 mask pores are 0.3 microns. But the N95 mask is not simply a miniature chain link fence, but uses fibers and electrostatic charges to capture viral particles. Most individuals, however, are wearing loosely fitting cloth masks, cheap surgical masks, or bandanas to cover their face and nose. These masks easily allow breath to escape through or around the mask, as this video from Dr. Ted Noel illustrates. You can go watch that video. Negative mask consequences range from the annoying, like headaches and bad breath, to potentially harmful, as in impaired oxygenation and gum disease. Then there are the psychosocial and development aspects, especially for children. So then he goes through in this article and gives some World Health Organization recommendations and quotes some very interesting people. So he first off here says, this is from the World Health Organization, how they originally did not actually recommend mask use for individuals unless they are sick with COVID or caring for someone who is sick. Quote, this is from the WHO. There is no specific evidence to suggest that the wearing of masks by the mass population has any potential benefit. In fact, there's some evidence to suggest the opposite in the misuse of wearing a mask properly or fitting it properly. Dr. Mike Ryan, Executive Director of the WHO Health Emergencies Program. Okay, that's interesting. That was March. April 2000 guidance. The WHO was against the routine public mask use. Quote, medical masks should be reserved for healthcare workers. The use of medical masks in the community may create a false sense of security, with neglect of other essential measures such as hand hygiene practices and physical distancing, and may lead to touching the face under the masks and under the eyes, result in unnecessary costs, and take masks away from those in healthcare who need them most, especially when masks are in short supply. Okay, so very interesting stuff from the WHO. And then, what did the king, the emperor, the untouchable, the omniscient Dr. Anthony Fauci say last March? There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a bit better, might even block a droplet. But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. And often there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with a mask and they keep touching their face. Former Surgeon General Dr. Jerome Adams agreed. Quote, seriously, people, stop buying masks. Adams purportedly tweeted on February 29, 2020. They are not effective in preventing general public from catching coronavirus, but if healthcare providers can't get them to care for sick patients, it puts them and our communities at risk. Yes, yet masks became a staple of life, not only in America, but also in many parts of the world. Was it logical? Did it, quote, follow the science? The Danish mask study provided some science to follow via a randomized controlled trial published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. Quote, the recommendation to wear surgical masks to supplement other public health measures did not reduce the SARS-CoV-2 infection rate among wearers by more than 50% in a community with modest infection rates. Some degree of social distancing and uncommon general mask use, end quote. They did not conclude that there was no protection, only not a significant degree of protection for the community. Are there any comparable studies demonstrating a significant benefit to mask wearing? Why haven't those studies been performed to, quote, follow the science? And there's a lot more we could go on there. And even in the Bob Siegel show a couple weeks ago, we spent a long time, Mike Friedenberg and I, who guest hosted it for Bob. Mike spent a ton of time talking about COVID. I encourage you to check out that show. It was podcasted out last Monday. One of the things Mike talks about is that if you look up studies, he said you can do this using Google. You can look up studies from like February 2020 and before about masks. You're going to see a very different narrative about the effectiveness, the efficacy of masks pre-COVID versus after COVID, before things got very, very, very politicized. And we know it got politicized because the ultimate goal and idea of this was multiple things, including enriching the pharmaceutical companies and changing the outcome of election and really turning the populace into just a subservient, silent, submissive population. So I might dig into a little bit of that and share some of those studies. He actually sent some over to me via email, and because I think the mask thing is very important. There's a big debate. You know, do you not love your neighbor if you're not wearing a mask? There's this billboard that I drive by every day, and it's an electronic billboard, and it says, "Love your neighbor as yourselves." And you know, they only started putting that out there after COVID, which "love your neighbor as yourself" now means do whatever Dr. Anthony Fauci says to do, even if at times he doesn't wear a mask, and even at times he contradicts himself over and over again. But that is whatever the CDC says, whatever Dr. Anthony Fauci says, is loving your neighbor as yourself. That's how we follow the Bible. We listen to whatever Dr. Anthony Fauci says, and we do what he says, and we follow the Bible. So we muzzle ourselves, mask ourselves, stay inside, locking ourselves in our homes for as much as possible, and that is somehow fulfilling the Great Commission. You know, when Jesus said, "Love your neighbor as yourself," they asked, "Who is my neighbor?" And so he talked about someone who is not of their ethnicity, you know, getting mauled by these bandits, and that person who is their his enemy, helping that person out, putting them in an inn, and then telling the innkeeper, hey, if he needs anything extra, charge it to my account. Like, that, biblically speaking, is loving your neighbor. But this idea that we have to wear masks for the rest of our lives in order to love our neighbor is ludicrous. It's unbiblical. It's taking the words of Christ and perverting them. Now, and I can understand at times, like if some little old lady is scared and I need to spend time with her and she really would like me to wear a mask, I'm going to wear a mask for her. They're all things. Paul said, I become all things to all people so that I might win some. So, I wear masks all the time. Unfortunately, it's the world we live in right now. But look, this idea that we're going to have to wear masks forever, because there's no end in sight. They want us wearing masks forever. Let's be honest. That's what they want. That, you know, that churches, we have to have our faces and our mouths muzzled, you know, forever. I don't think so. I don't think we're hating people, we're murdering people by our churches not wearing masks. But anyway, that's a whole nother issue. Maybe we'll do a whole show about that. But we've hit over an hour, but I wanted to get to this Abe Lincoln quote. Now, this is from an article called Revisiting Dred Scott: Prudence, Providence, and the Limits of Constitutional Statesmanship by Justin Buckley Dyer. I will put a link to it. I'll put a link to this right under the show at cgm.news, so you can have a quick access to it. It's on page 169 of the article. Again, it's one of these long scholarly journal articles, and it's really fascinating. The whole article is worth a read, but highly unlikely that you will want to. But I saw this, and of course, it's this idea of natural rights comes up. Natural rights that exist just as is. They're axiomatic. They're like the rights to life, liberty, and property. These are rights that are just given to us by God. They're not rights created by government. They're rights given to us by God, with an understanding of who we are as humans, who God created us to be, who He is, and so forth. And so, of course, in Lincoln's day, the question was slavery. Whose rights are correct? The right of the person in slavery to be free, or the right of the slave owner to own slaves? Sound familiar? Could we apply that to any issue today? About the right of that unborn child to life, or the right of the mother to have the baby terminated, to have the baby murdered. We're dealing with, I think the issue of abortion and likely education are probably the two biggest civil rights issues of our day. The ability of the unborn to be safe in her mother's womb, and also the right of children who are in these terrible schools to be able to not be locked into those schools because of their zip code. And of course, we're going to see religious freedom, freedom of speech. Those things are as well. But I think there's probably no greater modern corollary topic to the issue of abortion, or I'm sorry, the issue of slavery than abortion today. So anyway, but here is what Lincoln said. Well, here, I'll quote from the article, then I'll get to Lincoln's quote. In order to consistently support the principles posited by Taney and Dred Scott, one had either to deny the humanity of Africans or deny the moral relevance of human status to the constitutional rules governing property in the federal territories. For Lincoln, both of those denials were false. Equally, and perhaps more problematic, according to Lincoln, however, was the possibility that such a sweeping denial of natural rights for one class of people would destroy the logical foundation of the rights of the oppressing class. Lincoln expounded his argument in the following syllogism. If A can prove, however conclusively, that he may, of right, enslave B, why may not B snatch the same argument and prove equally that he may enslave A? Oh, let's say that again. If A can prove, however conclusively, that he may, of right, enslave B, why may not B snatch the same argument and prove equally that he may enslave A? You say A is white and B is black. It is color, then. The lighter having the right to enslave the darker? Take care. By this rule, you are to be slave to the first man you meet with a fairer skin than your own. You get that? By this rule, you are to be slave to the first man you meet with a fairer skin than your own. So if you are Caucasian of darker skin, then someone of lighter skin Caucasian could make the same argument. You do not mean color exactly. You mean the whites are intellectually superior of blacks and therefore have the right to enslave them? Take care again. By this rule, you are to be slave to the first man you meet with an intellect superior to your own. But, say you, it is a question of interest. And if you can make it your interest, you have the right to enslave another. Very well. And if he can make it his interest, he has the right to enslave you. You know, if this was a YouTube video, it would say, "Brilliant! President Lincoln eviscerates demon KKK rat slave tards with facts and logic, leaving them whimpering and crying like babies on the floor, begging for their coloring books and therapy dogs. Honest Abe annihilates demon KKK rat slave tards." And that's what he did, with facts and logic. Again, if you want to read this for yourself, cite it for yourself, but I just thought, I saw that. It was like, it was so simple. It was so clear. It was so brilliant. And it spoke to the people of his day. You know, and I think it also speaks to our day as well. It speaks to those who wish to silence those, to use hate speech laws, to silence people they disagree with. Take care. Someone else can say something is hate speech and do the same to you. You want to silence and basically cancel people out whose views that you disagree with politically. Well, take care, Abe Lincoln would say. The pendulum can swing back around to you. You want to pack the courts with all your people. Well, take care. When the next party gets into power, if they do, they can do the same thing to you. Brilliant logic, and I love it. All right, guys, that'll do it for today's episode of World News Brief by CGM Radio. Email me, world@cgmradio.com. You can subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/world. And of course, cgm.news for all the latest breaking developments. God bless. We'll see you next week. And may his kingdom come. His will be done on earth as it is in heaven.